The Spectator is Europe's fastest growing current affairs magazine. Subscribe today and find out why. You'll get 12 weeks in print and online for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of Spectator gin worth £30. So if you do the math, you'll work out that is absolutely free. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/gin.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Lara Prendergast.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Lydia Forte.
Lydia is the Group Director of Food and Beverage at Rocco Forte Hotels and is the daughter of Sir Rocco Forte and niece of Olga Polizzi.
Lydia joined the hotel group in 2014 and since then has overseen the group's food and beverage offerings around the world. She's opened many hotel, bars and restaurants, all with the aim that they will be as loved by locals as they are by guests. Lydia, thank you so much for joining Table Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so exciting to be on.
Lydia, we always start this podcast in the same place. We ask, what were your first memories of food?
Well, I'm sure everyone says the same thing. It's hard to have a first memory because it always just seems to be such a present thing and such an important thing. I was told that age 3, I was found with my cousin under a coffee table at Christmas celebration with my extended family having demolished the caviar canapes. But I think that's legend. Probably just sitting at home on our kitchen counter watching my mum cook various things. I have very specific memory of food at my dad's mother's house, both my grandparents' houses, but my dad's mum's house where she would do these big family gatherings, and at Christmas time there was always the arancini with tomato sauce, which were a very strong memory of childhood, I think.
And what were mealtimes like in your family?
Mealtimes were also very all about family, extended family together. During the week we didn't eat so much with our parents, I think because they were busy and they would go out a lot. But there was always delicious home-cooked food for us at home. And weekends were always very much family affairs. Saturday lunch, Sunday lunch was a absolutely family time. There was no question of doing something with friends or not being with your family. Just very relaxed and casual and sort of normal with generally very good food. We were very lucky because we come from this Italian family, and hospitality was also something that everyone cared deeply about, being the family business. So mealtimes were always taken with a certain amount of seriousness, and the quality of food was always very important. Generally ate very well.
With that family connection to hospitality, did you eat out much as a child with your family? Did you eat in the hotel restaurants or elsewhere? How did it work?
We did both. I mean, we had a lot of food at home, and home cooking was always Italian. But we also, I mean, we're incredibly lucky to grow up. I was incredibly lucky to grow up in London in this time when restaurants were sort of evolving and the breadth of what was available was exponentially growing. And so we used to go out a lot as well and enjoy all of what London had to offer. I mean, I remember when we were younger, we'd go out for a Chinese meal probably once a week or once every other week. And those were still in the days when actually the Chinese food wasn't that good. And so you'd go and you'd have, you know, it would be the crispy seaweed and the pork ribs and the shrimp toast, but none of it would be particularly good, but we adored it. It was, you know, and everyone thought it was revolutionary and amazing to be able to have this great Chinese food on your doorstep. And now, obviously, we've got so much more choice when it comes to Oriental or any kind of region cuisine, basically, in London.
What about school food? Do you have happy memories of school food?
I do, actually. But primary school, it was like a very proper English school, and they seemed very intent on teaching us good manners. So we were always 8 kids around a table, and one of the girls in the top year would serve you, and you'd have a proper 2-course meal with like very good, actually, home-cooked food. And there would always be a nice, yummy English dessert, which we would never get at home. I feel like desserts are the one things that in England were just better than what we got at home. And then secondary school, we had big choice. We had the salad bar and the pasta bar and the 2 cooked hot meals and the baguette bar and I remember ham, we had the best ham and cheese toasties. Every Thursday morning was a charity event, and the students would make ham and cheese toasties to sell to the others. And there was always a massive queue around the whole of the sort of ground floor of the school waiting for these cheese toasties to come out.
Did you start to learn to cook as a child?
Yeah, I think it was always around me and something that I was always interested in. And I was always watching what was going on, and there were always things being cooked, tomato sauces and whatever, stocks and all sorts of things. So I was always interested. But then at 18, I went to professional cooking school. I went to Leith's and I did a 3-month course there. And that's when I really sort of learned the basics of, you know, how long things go in the oven for, at what temperatures, and how to carve meats and debone things and fillet fish and all that stuff.
And what propelled you to go there? Was it with a knowledge that you might go into hospitality, or did it come from elsewhere?
Not at all. I think it was just very much a personal interest and something that I thought, having finished school, was a, you know, I now had this time to do something a bit different before I went to university. So I took a gap year, and it's just something that I really wanted to do. I was interested in, and I learned a lot. And that's when I started cooking more regularly after that, because, you know, I had that sort of basic grounding.
And you studied modern history at Oxford. What was food like at university?
I think my first year of university was probably the worst I ever ate. I shouldn't say that, because obviously they made such a huge effort in college food.
But it was awful.
But it was, you know, it was like, what would David Chan call it? Like ugly delicious. There was a lot of fast food, which was exciting in itself, because I never really had that at home. You know, we got taken to McDonald's once as a big, a submission on behalf of my mother that she would take us once to McDonald's in our life. You know, other than that, we never had any junk food at home. We never had any cupboards full of biscuits or things like that. And so my first year of Oxford, I think, was really not enjoying the college food that much, and not having a kitchen was really all about the kebab van and going. I was a terrible student. I'd do my essays overnight, one night a week. I would probably do all of my work in 24 hours for the week, and I'd order myself, the treat would be a pizza at like 1 a.m. if I could get through a certain amount of reading or whatever on Sunday night. And then second and third year, I moved out of college and lived with two girlfriends, one of whom is an amazing dessert cook. She's a perfectionist in every way, and she was just brilliant at desserts, and she'd make sponge sugar and do all sorts of amazing things with tempered chocolate, and so we used to cook a lot together, and we'd do a lot of dinner parties in our teensy tiny kitchen, which was, it's always surprising how much you can get out of a tiny kitchen. And we'd do like these dinners for 12 people, which was the max we could possibly feasibly fit if we put boards on every piece of furniture and had everyone sit down.
And what kind of things would you be cooking?
Well, I mean, we were still a pretty, you know, amateur cooks in tiny kitchens cooking for other students, for whom I think anything was like, you know, they're all very grateful. It was good, but the best possible audience you could ever cook for. We'd do like a risotto or a pasta to start, and then we put something in the oven, and then my friend would make some extraordinary dessert, and we'd all crowd in and drink some pretty bad wine and...
Perfect dinner party.
Yeah.
And after university, did you sort of always know that you wanted to go into hospitality, or were you a bit unsure of what you wanted to do?
I didn't really know, but in my second year, I sort of had to start thinking about what was coming next. And that's what I thought. Actually, I had an aha moment that what I really love was restaurants and food. And it's something that had always been part of my life. And more specifically, restaurants as well, the front of house side of things and how that all worked fascinated me, the ambience and how you create a restaurant. And so that's when, in the summer of my second year, I went to work at the Wolseley. I became an assistant maitre d', and that was my first real experience in the restaurant world.
Tell us about that. How was that?
Because I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was the first time I'd done a work experience or a job which I really enjoyed. I'd done all of this stuff and worked in magazines and advertising companies and done all sorts of internships every summer since I was quite young. And I found everything really dull. And then suddenly I had this the excitement of being on the floor of a restaurant and being part of a team and the adrenaline that comes with that and the kind of theatre that comes with it, and standing for longer than I thought possible to stand, and just being constantly on, which I found very exciting. And also having to be engaging with other people is very much a people job, which I loved. And being part of this, as I said, being part of this team, which had to work and function as a whole for anything to happen properly. And if one person's role didn't work, then the whole thing kind of fell through. And I found that sort of really fun to be a part of.
And you've since then been involved in the opening of various other restaurants. What's it like opening a restaurant? It must be quite a nerve-wracking time, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. It's always quite stressful. I mean, when I've opened restaurants as part of the operations team, and that is super exciting. That's a huge rush of adrenaline, and nothing ever works, and you're always like, you think it's impossible that this thing will ever open, and somehow it does, and somehow people have a good experience and you don't know how. But every time you open a new restaurant, and every time we relaunch one in our hotels, there's always a moment where you have a real crisis of self-confidence, and you wonder, have we done the right thing? Is it going to work out? Are people going to like it? And I think restaurants in general are quite like that. Whether you're on the floor or not, you know immediately the response that people have to your restaurant is very obvious. And you know immediately whether they've had a great time or a terrible time, and people tell you, and the results are tangible. So it makes it very exciting, but it's also quite stressful, I think, when you're doing something new or launching something new.
And what makes, in your opinion, a good restaurant or a good restaurant experience for the diner?
I think so much is about making the guest feel comfortable and valued. So if you go, you show up, and immediately you feel like they want you there. That's a big hurdle to have overcome. For me, food is really important. Really good food is crucial, but I don't think it's actually the thing that makes or breaks a restaurant. And I think for many people, it's not the most essential part of a dining experience. I think the atmosphere and how you're made to feel when you're there are the most important things, really.
Obviously, the past year has been very difficult, particularly for restaurants. How have you found it in the last year being involved in that industry?
I mean, it's quite depressing. I'm not going to lie. So everything that we do is about giving guests and our customers this kind of great experience, and we have no customers. I think it's very hard for everyone involved to keep their motivation up and to keep constantly planning for a future which you don't know when it's going to come. And I think the constant changing, especially things opening, closing, changes in regulation, now it's 6, now it's 4, now you can do deliveries, now you can't, has been really, really tough.
And you must be managing those competing guidelines across the world. You know, it's not like someone who's just got a London restaurant, and but you know what I mean? It's not just one set of guidelines that change. You must be dealing with competing guidelines from all over the place.
Yeah. And in fact, the only way really to deal with that is to have a lot of trust in the people that you have in each individual hotel on the ground, because they know, they have much better sense of when the regulation is going to change, if it's likely to change. And so it's just being constantly updated by them and trying to give advice for the different eventualities that may happen. In a way, it's been positive, and it's forced all of us in the restaurant hotel business to learn to be more flexible, learn to change things at the drop of a hat, and learn to adapt, which is not a bad thing. But it's a disaster. I mean, really, it's terrible. And lots and lots of people have lost their jobs, and many more will. And I just hope that we get out of it fairly quickly. I don't know.
On a personal rather than professional level, what have you missed most food-wise during lockdown? Is there a restaurant or a bar, or just the ability to eat with friends? What is it for you that's been hard?
I think probably actually going to a really good bar, because we've been doing a lot of cooking at home and we've had good food at home, which is great. And I've enjoyed being able to actually cook more, because I never had the time before. So I love cooking, but I never did it. So that's been fun. But I think also probably because I'm pregnant, the idea of going to a really good bar and having a vodka martini, you know, shaken for you at the bar, and having the service and having the linen napkin and just the whole theatre of it, and the atmosphere of a bar with other people having a good time and drinking and music and people dressed up. I think that's, I really miss that.
I hear you. And what, and when you are at home, what for you is comfort food? What have you found yourself cooking recently?
Well, comfort food, I mean, we do a lot of pasta, which has been fun because, again, in my normal life, so much of what I do is about eating and tasting and seeing what else is out there and trying restaurants and eating out, that when I was at home, I never really wanted to eat. It was always a, like, what's in the cupboard? Okay, there's a tin of butter beans. Let's make some butter beans and tomato sauce or something, or a bit of tuna with some salad or whatever was just easy and light, because I always felt so overfed. And now it's quite fun to be able to actually eat the things that you really want to eat at home, like pastas, things which are a bit heavier, things which are a bit more sort of tasty. Yeah, so a lot of pastas. And then we've been trialing every week doing like a themed night. So we did like a Mexican night and an Indian curry night, and that's quite fun. But then last week we did the best thing, because we're a handful of us here. We've got my extended family, my brother and his girlfriend, and my mum and dad. And we did family couples come dine with me.
Oh, wow.
Which was brilliant. And that sort of killed about a week of lockdown.
So how did that work? Did you do a different meal each night?
So every couple did a different meal each night and competed for the winning meal. And it got incredibly competitive.
First question, what did you serve for your night?
So I didn't want to do Italian because I thought my parents are going to judge it. This is what we eat all the time. If it's not perfect, there's going to be real sort of criticism. So I did, my husband's Greek, so I did a Greek themed Mediterranean night, and I did oysters and martinis as a canapé because I just really want a martini.
Living vicariously.
Yeah. And then we did mezze as a starter, but I got inspired a lot by the Mezze cookbook. So I did tempura feta and I did crispy octopus and homemade tiramisu and a homemade bread. And then as a main course, we had slow cooked belly of lamb and miso aubergines and basically a hummus, a warm hummus.
Yum.
And then I made a cheesecake because desserts aren't really my thing. And that seemed quite straightforward.
Do you have a sweet tooth?
Not really. I'm much more of a savory person. It's all about cheese and salami and those sorts of things for me.
Sorry to take us back to the come dine with me, but you have to tell us who won.
We don't know yet.
Oh, you don't know? It's still ongoing.
It's ongoing. We find out early next week.
That's so exciting.
It's really exciting, but it's also really nerve-wracking because I feel like if I don't win, it's been a massive failure. Like my whole life.
Leading up to this point.
Yeah. And I can swear to you, I spent 2 full days cooking. My sister ordered equipment to lay the table for her Valentine's Day dinner. My mother delivered the invitations with individually wrapped bunch of flowers.
Oh, this is so good. we normally ask what your desert island meal is, but I feel like we've come quite close. I will ask, and you can just tell us if you've already told us. What would be your ultimate desert island meal?
I think it would be Fulvia Perangelini, who's this amazing chef who works, he's our creative director of food, makes the most amazing ravioli. And it would probably be his ravioli cacio e pepe. And then I think lobster, because it feels like a special occasion, with just really plain with homemade mayonnaise and chips. And then maybe the chocolate nemesis cake from the River Cafe.
That is a good menu. That is a very good menu.
Yeah. It's not very exciting or gastronomic, but I feel like it's the things that you really want to eat.
That's exactly what you need from a desert island meal, though. I lobster and chips and mayonnaise, that's perfect. We shouldn't do these podcasts at 3 p.m. because it just makes me want to eat. It's a long time till dinner.
Lydia, thank you so much for joining Table Talk, and we look forward to hearing the results of Come Dine With Me.
Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories, and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.